to be active in our country. I think the most important thing which I've noted from the input is that it seems as if we have so many memorandum of understanding in such a way that it would be ideal if we have an evaluation of what we have, so that we can see whether we still need. I think you also spoke of certain years when some of the issues were done many years back, which may not even be viable today. Probably we may still even be paying for them, but are they really worth it? Should we really seriously be looking at all of those and evaluating them? And then lastly, the issue of the countries. I think it's where you have the top five source markets. When I look at the information on my left of this page, I do take note of all the countries where we have got very low numbers or numbers that are getting down, where we are not getting people to come in. That is a problem to me, because those are countries that have got financial resources, financial muscle. What is being done to actually ensure that we bring them on board again? For a country like the US, I can see the arrow there. It's the only arrow that seems to be going up. I wonder when this information was sourced. Was it before Mr. Trump went on his offensive? I think we are aware of what he has done a few times, not too long ago. Was it before then? Are we still seeing it right now, or is this information outdated information where we are seeing a high rise in people? So it's quite important for us to have that. And then, of course, the African countries, one actually understands why we have a high rise, because they use our country as a place where they get a lot of their stock. It's actually the economic hub for them. So we understand why we have a lot of people coming in, but we need to also weigh it in and see to that there is value for us as a country once we are taking them on board. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. I also just have two questions better directed to the department. One is the issue of the training agreements between municipalities and provinces. Now, as I have listened to your presentation, you mentioned the fact that these agreements take a long cycle to and fro, and so that at the end of the day, it's a document that can be agreed by both parties. But what I've seen is that municipalities and provinces would go to a country, and after visiting the country, an MOU is signed. You know, and we see pictures on Twitter, on Facebook and social media that there has been an agreement that has been signed between a municipality and a province and this country and this agency. Now, I'm now intrigued to say, did their process also go through the cycle that you've mentioned, or they have a quicker way of making sure that their agreements do not go through such a process that yours are taking, you know? Because at times, I read a few times where, you know, some of the agreements were in conflict with other issues, you know, like a city, one specifically, the city of Johannesburg, one signed an agreement with another country, and, you know, Derco was then up in arms to say, but, you know, what is happening and so on. So I want to find out, how do you monitor this on the tourism space? Because I see you are interested in the tourism space. To say, when do you come in and monitor and ensure that the municipalities and the provinces actually sign MOUs that are in line with what you would, or the prescripts that are there that you undergo? And then secondly, and final question, is the issue of RITOSA. You mentioned the fact that RITOSA will be now housed at the AU. and as in an office at the AU. But you just also mentioned that the model also is going to be changing. Can you share with us how now Retosa is going to be modeled and whether it will still achieve the desired outcome which was put there in place? Because it's one thing to say there are governance issues and then you are winding and closing up because there are governance issues. But I would think that governance and leadership and finance issues should be corrected, because Retosa was established to ensure that there's regional integration. Whether Retosa is still relevant and whether the way you are going to house it, is it still going to be relevant, and how best are you in a space to remedy the governance and the challenges, the leadership and finance challenges within Retosa? Thank you.
No, I want to ask if you we can start. That's fine. Thank you very much, honourable members, DM. I'm going to try and answer some of the questions, and then my colleagues and Deputy Minister can add and correct where I'm wrong. I want to take one step back with the Retosa matter, because I think it's important for us just to get a bit of more information around it. Many years ago, it was still in former Minister van Schalkwyk's time, there was a period where South Africa did not pay its membership fee to Retosa. And we said that we have an issue with the governance of Retosa, and until it is corrected, we're not going to pay our membership fee. And we were very clear around our position. It was two years, perhaps, that we didn't pay. And we were open about it, and we indicated that we will pay as soon as the following things are in place. Because as a country, we said that we are using taxpayers' money to pay our membership fee, which is more than 3 million rand per annum, to be a member of this organization or this body called Retosa. We do believe in the intent of Retosa around regional integration, around creating a better Africa, a better region, around working together in marketing the region. But we believe that the vehicle does not support that. The SADC ministers at that time then undertook a process and said, let's look at, because at that point, to be honest, the SADC secretariat delegated all tourism-related responsibilities to Retosa, whereas Retosa initially was created as a marketing entity. At some point, Retosa was doing everything, and SADC wasn't really giving attention to tourism per se. So we said, let's start, or we recommend it, because remember, SADC is not South Africa. It's a process with 15 member countries. How many? 15 member countries. And we said, let's restructure Retosa. Let's re-establish, because there was a position of a unit within SADC, although it wasn't full. Let's re-establish the unit within SADC so that unit be responsible for policy matters, and let's give Retosa their mandate of marketing. That process then went through many years and many discussions, and the ministers agreed. It was the unit is being re-established, the new board was elected, new CEO, and new membership. But again, we were faced with a situation of governance issues, with members not paying. Just to indicate, one of the members asked about the payment. South Africa's contribution was around, we talked about it this morning, 27% of the total contribution was roughly from South Africa. All member states were part of Retosa. except for fairly recently Botswana and Mauritius withdrawn from Rotosa, not from SADC obviously, but from Rotosa. So they withdrawn from the two. Up until the meeting of the SADC Council last week, I'm told many countries are still saying we are committed to pay our membership fee. But we have been hearing this, as Ntobeko was saying, in many forums that they committed, and then at the end they did not pay. So at this point, the ministers made the commitment again, so we are looking forward to that membership fee being paid. And yes, honorable members, we are paying and we are closing it down. It's not going to exist anymore, but there is contracts that they, you know, for rental, for leases, for copier machines, for legal, for salaries, that they must settle. And if we do not pay those, it's going back to member states, that expenses. So we said as South Africa, we will honor our commitment and we will pay our dues, and so that Rotosa can be closed down and that we can pay, or they can pay what they need to pay. In terms of the way forward, so Rotosa is no more. What the SADC Secretariat has now been instructed is to work on a plan to make sure that moving forward, the mandate of promoting the region will still be executed. So the SADC Secretariat, in collaboration obviously with member states, will work on the plan moving forward. What is the new vehicle? And how will this new vehicle look that will assist in promoting the region? Because all member states still feel it's important. We still believe in that intent. We are just saying that the vehicle didn't serve the purpose, and member states then decided let's just close it down, because we did, as member states, try to restructure and that didn't help, and in the meantime member states must pay their dues and nothing happened. So on the Rotosa, the SADC unit that is situated in Botswana, they will work on the plan, and then that plan will be discussed by member states to see how that is going to be implemented and to agree on that. The signing of twinning agreements, honorable chair, no, their process is not a long one. It's because it's not a legal instrument. So it's not a legal instrument. And on a technical level, I think we are on the same page when it comes to our provincial counterparts. But the decision to sign the agreement is not always on a technical level where the decision is taken. In tourism, we both parties, provinces, national, have decided that we need to improve on the situation. We are currently busy developing a framework for integration, because we are saying ideally we want everything to fit into the national agreement, and all of us will be implementing the national agreement through various ways. The province doing something, or the department doing something, or the private sector doing something, but it will be under the same agreement. As we believe, but we can't prove it, as we believe that our partnerships and our relationships that we have formed through our MOUs with China, Russia, and Angola assisted us to get either visa waivers or visa certification in those countries. We are currently working on that framework. We do have a sense of which provinces signed twinning agreements with which countries, or which provinces in countries that has an element of tourism in it. And we are trying to group all of this, and it will get into the process at the moment to make a decision around that. Return on investment in monetary value, honorable bomb, it's sometimes very difficult to say directly. Indirectly, as I say, you know, we do have a MOU with Russia for many years. We believe that relationship that we built with Russia assisted the Department of Home Affairs to to make a decision that there is no risk anymore for Russians travel to South Africa, and they waive the visa requirements. Subsequently, we saw Russian tourists increase by 52% to South Africa, so spend increase. So that's their monetary value that we do get out of that. Assisting bed and breakfasts. We do even us try and you know make a conscious decision not always to stay in big hotels when we travel, but also to stay in bed and breakfasts, but only the graded ones. So what we do as a department, amongst other things, is we assist B&Bs to get graded. We also provide them market access through our, or they can apply for market access through our tourism incentive program, either to exhibit or go to Indaba or to exhibit at some of our international platforms. So there's that kind of initiative. There's also, when it comes to initiatives around the chef training, they have the opportunity to get their chefs or get chefs that are trained from through that program, the service excellence and that soft skills. In IPSA, in IORA, Honorable Masiela, IORA tourism is still prioritized, very much so. You asked, we see the slide, it said 2013, but it's very much still prioritized. This year, we hosted a senior officials meeting on the margins of Indaba. As Ms. Beko said, during IORA this year, we also had a workshop on coastal and marine tourism in line with Operation Pakisa, and the minister will host the ministers of IORA of the IORA states in October, I think. So it's very much alive and going well in IORA with regards to tourism. Yeah, I think I didn't speak to the twinning, the issue of the concurrent function of tourism between provinces and national also needs to be kept in mind, that tourism is a concurrent function. So, we can't really say don't sign these agreements, but we need to see how we better align them, because I think Honorable Masiela did mention that sometimes it might be necessary. But at least we must be in the same strategy. Honorable Mkwewu, you spoke about the low hanging fruit and that perhaps the MOUs might not be the best vehicle for these because it takes so long. I must say that our first port of call is not necessarily signing an MOU when we engage with a country. We will first say, is there not a project that we can work together? Let's first identify a project and let's work together on the project and see, you know, how it goes, and if there's then a need to sign an MOU, let's sign the MOU, but it should not be the first thing that you do. But we do see certain regions in the world, especially towards the east, that prefer to have a formal agreement with you before they do anything, partner on anything. But as an example of a project is that we are working with Namibia on the cross-border tour guide training, and we do not have an MOU with Namibia. We're in the process of signing one. It's a consequent sort of outflow of the project. But when we started with them, we started with the project to say that we have, as part of regional integration, tourists that travel from South Africa to Namibia. They want the same experience, the same standards when it comes to guides. How do we do that as a pilot? And that's what we do without having a formal MOU. I just want to also mention that some of the things that we did around the skills and the capacity building were in many cases pilots, in many cases first attempts for us as well. The Mandarin language training first of its kind that we did. We learned a lot of lessons. We understand the importance of partnerships even in that space. Even with the chefs that we place in those shelves. We learned a lot of lessons around expectations of accommodation, the practical day-to-day. But we know that moving forward, these pilots are not necessarily the way that we will continue doing it, because they might not be the most cost-effective. But we needed to see if it's going to work. So for the Seychelles, for example, a training institution in the Seychelles and a training institution in South Africa signed an MOU to exchange. In China, CAPCITA are now sending 120 learners on a work integrated learning program as an outflow of our project, and that's not going to cost us anything. So we're now starting to see the pilots that we did moving into other initiatives. I'm going to hand over to the colleagues if they want to add something. If that's interbreakable, if somewhere.
Yes. Thank you very much, KTT. You have captured a lot, TTG, about the retorsa, but perhaps just to share with the honorable members the gravity of the situation with retorsa, that the governance challenges were actually mainly because of the allegations that were leveled to the CEO. And this CEO happens to be a South African. That's the first point. And the second part about is that it also puts South Africa in a precarious position, because it perceives that one of our own is contributing to the mismanagement of this organization. And they ended up settling with that CEO and they fired, but they have to pay him. That's the first thing. The second part, honourable members, is that member states were not paying to a point where Retosa requested our department to even give them a loan so that they can pay staff. Staff were not paid for 3 months up until Angola paid their membership last month. Then they managed to pay those arrear payments for staff. But the biggest problem now is not where is the money going to come for paying of staff for August and, of course, the settlement, because there are 4 executives there. And DG always makes this point that those executives are even paid more than he's been paid. But they are working from home now because of how the dire situation is. And part of what the ministers decided last week was that when we wind down Retosa, we must ensure that even the negotiations on parting ways with the executives, it takes into account that the organization does not have money. So the money that South Africa is going to pay is going to pay to some extent some of the obligations, but there is still going to be more money that is going to be needed. And coming back to the question raised that what about the other countries? The SADC Treaty is very clear, the SADC Treaty, that if a country is in arrears for a period of 2 years and more, it must be suspended. But the biggest problem is that with Retosa, that was never enforced. That is why you've got countries, to mention like a few like DR Congo, that has been in arrears for a period of 8 years. But it is still part of Retosa. They come to the meeting and deliberate. So that element was never enforced, and South Africa had to carry this all along without the organization actually achieving its mandate. The other area is that Retosa recently, they also requested that we give them as a department office space, because the landlord is chasing them out of the building. Again, as a country, we said no, this is a SADC institution, not a South African institution. So all of these things, and the last part, members, is that the Retosa board itself, in May, it had a meeting in Durban during Indaba. It took a resolution itself that with member states not paying, the best way is for Retosa to close. That was a decision of the board by that time. And the recent development is that even the board now is dysfunctional. The chairperson is the only person who is working in the board. The other members have stopped participating in the board. So the decision then that was taken by ministers in the council meeting was informed by all of this and the gravity of the situation. That is subject, whilst we want to promote tourism in the region, we should not be actually cooperating at a mediocre level through Ritosa. We've got to up our game and find a better mechanism that can advance the region. In terms of BRICS and ITSA, this is the country position, honourable member, that BRICS should continue side by side with IPSA. It is bringing some complications. For example, in the tourism sector, when we tried to establish a tourism stream to coordinate tourism issues, the other countries were not interested. First, they were saying, we've got bilateral agreements with these countries, so why do we establish a BRICS tourism? We should rather focus all our energies in the bilateral work. Secondly, they said that, well, if we feel strongly about BRICS, but we must ensure that whatever cooperation we've got at BRICS, it does not duplicate what is being done at IPSA. So our cooperation now at BRICS and IPSA are continuing, and we are navigating this space quite cautiously so that we don't duplicate what is being done through IPSA and in the BRICS. So that is how we are managing this at this stage. But our foreign policy still says that we must continue with both formations, just ensure that we don't duplicate. And there are pros and cons about this. In terms of IORA funding,